Hello and welcome to Only Fools and Brotherly Forces, the Only Fools and Horses rewatch podcast with me, Bobby, and my brother, Jamie. Good evening, Jamie.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
I'm very well, mate. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good stuff. So, it's a big one.
It is very big.
This is, I think when we talked about doing this podcast, this is one of the episodes that came to mind first as one of the ones I'd most enjoy talking about. It's combining two of our favourite things, Only Fools and Horses and poker. I mean, what else is there to say?
I did wonder if this episode is so significant in the series, not in series two, but the series of Only Fools and Horses, if it's significant to others as well as being a really good episode because it has poker in it, or in just in general, or if we're just massively biased and it stands out hugely for us. I'm sure that when I've spoken about Only Fools and Horses with other people, this episode's come up in conversation. So I think it's well known regardless. I don't know, it's just because poker is seen as cool anyway, and it's just like a cool thing to chuck in the show.
I think this is a very classic episode that a lot of people think of when they think of, especially early Only Fools and Horses. I do think it's one of the definite standout episodes. And yeah, like you say, poker is a thing shown a lot on TV and film and stuff, like, you know, James Bond and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it is cool. I did actually see one of the things kind of as a bit of pre-information for the episode. Apparently John Sullivan's old man was a big poker player, or at least had card game like meetings at his house that he used to see, and that's kind of what gave him the idea. And a lot of the stuff for the episode was his old man's poker clubs at his house.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting.
The episode itself, I don't know, I think because I've been looking forward to it and I was kind of trying to find some really good things to talk about in it, I didn't look at it at face value as I do with when I'm watching things not on the podcast. As we've discussed before, watching them back on the podcast is a very different experience than just enjoying the episode. So because I had a lot of concentration on this episode, because it's a big one, I probably enjoyed it less. I was a lot more researchative. I was looking into things more.
Researchative, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely a word.
Is it actually?
No.
It sounds good, though.
Does it?
So I kind of had my head a bit up my own arse, really, and I didn't take it so much at just watching value. So with that, I probably didn't analyse how much of a good episode I actually thought it was as a whole. Thinking about it now, I think it was pretty slow. Only three scenes. Probably wasn't like hugely laugh out loud. There's actually a couple of missed jokes, which I'll touch on earlier for sure, which is good. But it just comes down to that last scene. I mean, that last scene comes in with about 10 or 15 minutes left, and it's just kind of poetic. I don't know, even though you kind of have a feel for what's going to happen, I was very invested still in the storyline, which was wicked.
Definitely. Well, we should probably get into it then.
Yeah, season 2, episode 3, personal favourite for both of us, A Losing Streak. Stick a pony in
my pocket, I'll fetch the suitcase from the bank. So, we open in the flat, as we so often do, just a great initial concept, which is the making their own aftershave or perfume or eau de toilette or whatever you want to call it, in a like bath or like a giant bedpan looking thing.
Yeah, with bottles. It's like what kids used to bath in during war times.
Absolutely. And with like Yves Saint Dior written on it, which again is great. I mean, they must have gone to the effort of making them, or maybe they've got the bottles hooky and that's what gave them the idea to make it. I don't know how this has all come about, but I think it's great. I love the idea of just making these dodgy perfumes and pouring it into bottles. It later transpires that none of them are sold. They're not at all popular and they're deeply unpleasant, which comes as a surprise to no one, I'm sure.
Yeah. I thought it was quite interesting. I don't think that we've seen like them building up a product, as it were. Like, they got a lot of shit, sold a lot of shit, but they're literally going one step further this time and designing a product to sell by probably being even more cheeky. which was interesting.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's creation. There aren't that many examples of that, isn't it? It's just usually moving stuff from A to B. But this is actually, yeah, creating a product, which is quite interesting. Another classic thing that's happening there in the background, of course, is Dell on the phone doing a deal, which is always a joy. Trying to sell a mink coat, or what might be a mink coat, might also be tabby.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, it says he's selling the mink coat for 50 quid, and that was meant to be kind of like jokingly cheap. And I was like, 50 quid is, you know, a decent amount of money at the time. I was curious, how much do you think a mink coat goes for?
A proper mink coat?
An actual mink coat. Like a cheap... Ludicrous. The cheapest, what they said, you can get cheap ones for... Oh, right. Like a thousand.
eBay from China?
I'm not sure. I didn't look them up. It was an article about it rather than actually me looking for mink coats. It was an article about them.
500 quid.
$1,000 is like very low.
I was
end.
Thinking about 1,000, but when you said cheap, I thought I'd better knock it down.
So fair enough. 50 quid back then is, that's a pretty cheap mink coat, I guess.
That's funny that you've quizzed me, because I've got a couple of quiz questions for you during this. Wonder if you'll know them as well.
Like
I said, I did some research today.
Get in. Always love a quiz question.
So we get a French phrase quite early on, which is bouffe à la mode, which is a French version of what they would say in the US as a pot roast, or in England like a slow roasted beef for a tougher cut of beef, just in case you were really wondering what that meant. And we can see Dale sort of fingering away at his money. He's David Jason's doing his very good subtle stuff again. On the exterior, he's very happy, very energetic, but you can see this little thing niggling away at him, like he has a concern. There's something not quite right there. Again, David Jason doing a great job of portraying both of these things simultaneously, which is really good.
What I found quite interesting here is with that kind of subtlety that Rodney notices, and Rodney is trying to find out what's wrong, and Dell's like, nah, all good. I'm pretty sure. Is this the first time he says, he who dares wins?
Oh, yes. I think it might be. Even though I searched for it, trying to find out if it was. That's a few things I searched. I've searched for a few things about, was this the first time? And I couldn't find definitively that it was. But that was my gut instinct. When I heard it, I was like,
it is.
I don't remember hearing that again.
I feel like we would have mentioned it, and I don't remember mentioning it. That's the
thing. No, and this is surely a great episode to have it involved, as in it's about gambling. Yeah, someone wants to correct us, then that would be great. Well, not great, but you can let us know.
I'll allow it, us
going through. Yeah, I'll allow it.
But I found it really interesting how he was hiding his concerns from Rodney, and then obviously he was saying all was good, and then Rodney leaves, but then he opens up to Grandad, which was a kind of interesting. I mean, of course, it's just a plot device, but it was kind of an interesting dynamic in the house. That's maybe something that hasn't come up before, the idea of Dell confiding in Grandad, because he tells him like straight away, honestly, it's like, yeah, I've been losing a ton of money in cards to Boise, where he didn't want to say anything to Rodney, because, you know, Rodney is the young one. He's the one, he doesn't want to let him worry, where Grandad, he can be a bit of a confidant.
It does kind of come up that Rodney is obviously a bit more sensitive, touchy. You know, he's much more likely to be outspoken about his opinion and have problems and or affected by it, whereas Grandad's obviously a bit more indifferent. But yeah, that was that's an interesting point. After that's gone on, Grandad gets out something which is really, really cool. A double-headed coin.
So cool.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about it for years.
No, I forgot about it completely. But yeah, I want to get a double-headed coin. Like, what a cool thing to have. I guess it's just a proper old pop culture sort of thing.
Right, so again, I looked into it. I was like, how much is a double-headed coin? Like, where do you get them?
You get them for nothing, surely.
Yeah, you get, because they're quite common in like magic tricks and stuff like that. They're still quite difficult to make a good one, because you have to make it like look good and feel good and everything. But yeah, you can get like a 10p or 50 pence piece for English for like 5-10 quid.
Yeah, for sure.
I might get one.
Yeah, why not? And keep it in a little stupid pocket around your neck.
I might not do that, but I might but I certainly get it. I love the very, very classic kind of macabre story that Grandad sells about it, and it's just it's one of those classic little granddad monologues, and I just always love them so much. And the quote at the end is just a great way that he rounds it off.
Yeah, I was fully planning to sample that one because I've said another war story from Grandpa and Granddad in his somber, soft voice. He does have a very soft voice. So let's just play it because I love that quote.
Dominic, I thought you only saw these in them old British movies.
Scotch bloke give me that during the war. I remember it like it was yesterday. His hands was trembling and his voice was just a whisper. He said, I want you to have something to remember me by, Trotter. Take me lucky coin. Then he went.
Well, he died.
Deserted. Mind you, you couldn't blame him the way them Germans was carrying on. Someone was going to get hurt.
What's also interesting about that is that is the one of two references to Germans and war in the episode. Which is
that interesting?
Maybe it's not.
Well,
but
what was the second one?
Well, Grandad talks about getting this from his mate who deserts, and then Del Boy says later in the episode that people like him are the ones that capture German machine gun nests because he's so gung ho.
Oh yeah, okay.
So yeah, he's using the double headed coin of a deserter, but apparently he's one of the brave, over the top boys.
Yeah, I got it.
I'm stretching, but you know.
well, at that stretch, we should probably move on to the second scene where they leave and head towards the Nag's Head. Because if you are the best, but you don't ask questions, then brother, I'm your man. So we are at the bar with Dan and Rodney. It comes to light, as you already mentioned, that they sold zero bottles of scent, particularly because one of them said the last time they smelt something like that was when a bomb went off in a cat factory or something crazy like that.
Hang about. I saw you sell one.
No, she brought it back.
Oh, why?
She smelt it. She said to me, the last time she smelt an odour like that was when the cat sanctuary got bombed during the war.
They bombed a cat sanctuary, which actually is the third reference to the war.
Good. Yeah, very good.
If we're counting.
Trig strolls in and starts spilling the beans that Del's been on a bit of a losing streak. He says something, it was a bit like the Moonies, which is easy to get into and hard to get out of. I had no idea what it was, so I was just curious.
Never heard of the Moonies?
No, did you know?
It's a cult.
Specifically, did you know much more than that?
I mean, it was one of the big main cults. It's the one where they have loads of
before we were born.
Yeah, obviously, but I mean, you know, lots of things happened before we were born. But like, history's a subject that exists.
Politics and history, not such a massive amount for me, anyway.
Yeah, fair enough. No, it's an American cult, isn't it?
Yes. Well, for any of those that don't know, which are anyone the same age as us or younger that aren't as well educated as my dearest brother, it was a religious cult, and it began in the 50s and 60s when missionaries from Japan and South Korea were sent to the US by the International Unification Movement's founder Sun Myung Moon.
Amazing pronunciation of Myung. It sounded like you had some sort of elastic band in your mouth.
This is another joke this is one of the few jokes that I was talking about that fell on deaf ears. It didn't really get a reaction, so it clearly wasn't as funny then as it clearly was as funny then as I thought it was now.
I'm going to pretend I followed any of that.
All right, go on then. You talk for a bit.
Cool. So it comes to light, as you say, that Dale's been losing a lot of money. Specifies 150 quid to be exact the previous night, which is a ton of money to lose in poker in the 80s when you're skint and live in a council house. So Rodney obviously goes off on one. I love the classic insult from Del.
You give my arse an headache, Rodney. You really do. You know nothing about cards, do you? You and your little mates are still playing strip snap, ain't you? One of these days, they're thinking of inviting some girls along.
So, yeah, after losing all that money, it turns out Del has 70 quid left, kind of, in the world, and his plan for that money is another game of poker. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, as we said before, we should probably state, so we are both big fans of poker. We both played a lot of poker in our lives. We both learned to play poker very young. I'm not sure what part of this played in that. I feel like it played some part. Like watching this show maybe gave us part of our interest in poker. I'm not sure. I did actually try to call Mum before the show to ask to talk a bit more about this. Like, what age did we learn to play poker? Did we just learn it from you, or was it? Did we ask about it because of the show? Blah 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 blah. But she was out. So
I always have this idea that we played poker first, or kind of in tandem. But we were aware of cards and played cards earlier and a bit of poker, and then this sort of installed the idea that it was cool to play, so we played a bit more. But I don't think we were playing very seriously for a long time.
But I think we were like, we were getting out, you know, matchsticks and playing hands together when we were not even in double digits.
Yeah, for sure. Getting the basic premise down.
But yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, what I was going to say is, could you imagine playing for your last 70 quid? That is not how I like to play my poker. You know.
No, for sure. I mean, since that time that we first learned, we've both hosted quite a few poker tournaments in our houses, done a few multi-tables. I even, believe it or not, happened to be in Las Vegas last week and played in a poker tournament.
I was thinking this would come up.
Obviously awesome. Well, yeah. I was going to reference it later in a different part that it kind of matched up. But now that you've mentioned that we play so much, I kind of have gone into it. So I'll touch on it again later.
Nice.
But yeah, I played poker last week in Vegas, and it was one of my biggest bucket list things ever. Just absolutely loved my life and really enjoyed it. So
winning helps as well, doesn't it?
Winning does help as well. I managed to get a little placement on the final table of a big casino. So yeah, super, super happy.
Yeah, I bet you were. Nah, chuffy. Yeah, that was fun. But yeah, playing for his last few quid, never something I'd recommend. Not a way to play poker. But then in comes Boise, looking as creepy and shifty, but somehow also kind of cool and authoritative.
Yeah, I said he looked, came in looking very derogatory and down looking, with this like stiff posture, and talks about just making a small matter of 850 quid that morning, which unfortunately is only not enough to heat a swimming pool for a week. Hard life.
I love that actually bringing up a swimming pool. Like, he knows who he's talking to. Like, yeah, it hasn't come up at any point yet of how they all know each other. I don't think it actually all marries up, because Del referenced the fact that he's a mate from Lewisham, where later it turns out they all went to school together. So I'm not sure all of this really ties in and if they'd had this planned early. But, you know, Boise definitely knows who he's talking to and is definitely just on one. I found it actually really interesting. I heard the other day that one of the things that got John Challis the role was, in a previous show, he was, I think it was a CID police officer, like some form of detective. Right. And I was thinking that really fits. I reckon he'd be very good at that type of role. And I could see why elements of that work really well for Boise's character, especially in the early series.
Yeah, so I've never thought about that. But yeah, he has that very old school policeman, authoritative sort of arsehole vibe.
Yeah.
And so he talks about Marlene.
All the lads remember Marlene.
All the lads remember Marlene. It's a joke that does kind of recur in one way or another. So this is one of my questions to you, assuming you didn't also research it. Do you know when we see Marlene for the first time?
No, I don't. It's late. It's loads later than I think. I think it's... Yeah. I did think ahead. Is it maybe series 5?
Very close. You've got much closer than I had. I assumed it would have been in this series or the next, but it's actually season 4, episode 5, Sleeping Dogs Lie.
Yeah, that's the fact.
So it's very late. I mean, that's still a long time away from where we are now until we meet Marlene. There's quite a lot of character building before she comes in.
And like, she doesn't disappoint, does she? But no, can't get distracted by Marlene. Got to be all day.
She definitely nails her character.
So they have a little bit here where you know, Del's spending loads of money on a round trying to make out that he's flush. He then loses money on a bet, trying to bet what the next bloke's going to order as he walks in.
But he obviously loses that bet because he bet he was going to get a pint, and this big burly guy gets a very feminine drink. So as Boyce is walking away, Del decides to try and have one last little stab at taking some money off Boyce and giving this double-headed coin a whirl. Obviously, Boyce calls heads. I mean, there's no other way around it.
I don't know how you get around this problem. It instantly makes a double-headed coin seem shit.
That's what I thought was really obvious, is that for a double-headed coin, you have to stack the cards, as it were. You have to say, okay, blah, 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 cool. Either you spin or I'll call or whatever. Like,
but you can't let them spin because that gives them the chance to look at it, not that most people would.
No, but I mean, as in you make it in a way that they can't possibly win, so somebody else calls for you or whatever. Like most magic tricks, like, it's not foolproof. You have to rig the game.
If you had a double-headed coin, like we spoke about, like if we went out and bought a double-headed coin, I wanted to occasionally tuck up a mate for a laugh, how would I do it, and how would I make sure that didn't happen?
You just make sure that you call, and you call heads, or you get
you
somebody else.
You call and spin? No one calls and spins. What kind of society would we be living in?
Well, if you only want to do it once, you'd get away with it.
Yeah, maybe.
Confidence. So basically, he loses money, and obviously Rodney's livid.
He is furious. However, he's very quickly turned around by a classic Del story, the tales of woe and mum and dad. And we have our little deep moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's too long to play the whole thing, but it is another sad story from Del about the father, their father leaving them at 16 on their birthday, on his birthday no less, and even took his cake. But obviously it's one of the reasons for Del's toughness. Quite an interesting bit here. He talks about the lion coming in. I don't know if you researched this or not. And he says, my old April was pouting like a good'un. Did you look into anything like that?
Yeah, I did. Because I just wanted to find out what the hell the rhyming slang was. And then I remembered that I'd heard the story. I think he talks about it in his autobiography. But there were news articles about it. But yeah, so go ahead.
I actually mistook this when I always thought he said my old April was pounding like a good'un and assumed it was his heart, because
yeah,
his heart was pounding.
Absolutely what I think most people assume, yeah.
But the quote is April was pouting like a good'un, and the April Cockney rhyming slang link is actually April in Paris, Harris, and a bit more, but basically is your arse. So he's saying his arse is pouting like a good'un, which is reasonably vulgar, but, you know, still awesome. And
it doesn't matter
article
that it's vulgar, because no fucker understood it.
No. And it leads on to what's in the autobiography and in the article, that David Jason didn't know what it meant and asked John Sullivan what it was, and John Sullivan was confident it would get a laugh in the series. And it basically didn't. No one kind of understood what it meant. And there's a laugh there, but it doesn't hit as it should do.
No, definitely not. That is definitely a miss. And it's funny to think that he could get something so wrong in that one. And it is only a small joke, but it's strange to think that's not something that happens very often. Yet it can obviously happen. So I like the risk element of being... I don't know if it is a risk. Maybe he was just wrong. Like, he didn't think it was a risk. He was just confident it'd be fine. But yeah, interesting.
But quite rare. We got a couple of instances in the first half of this episode where it just seemed like a miss. And this is what I was saying about overanalyzing the episode. I've innocently looked into these two things, trying to educate myself, and then found out that they were meant to be funny and missed, which kind of... That doesn't taint my impression of the episode, but the first half of the episode, I've been enlightened to these things. And I guess one of those things, it can not spoil it for you, but it just alters your perception, I guess, when you start to look into things that deeply. It's much easier to just be oblivious or ignorant to any sort of mistake like that and just enjoy it at face value, and you'd never know, and it would be forgotten about.
I think it was maybe Jimmy Carr I heard say this quote. I don't know if it was his. It's something like, dissecting a joke is like dissecting a frog. Or it's like no one learns a thing and the frog dies. or words to that effect. And yeah, that is often the way, but you know, such is life. But I do like how Rodney eats up all this story of kind of bravery and stuff from Dell, and then gets right behind it again and says he's going to take back the empties from a party they had the other day to provide extra steak money. That turns out to provide £4.37. Well done, Rodney. But it's funny, I didn't know taking empties back for money was a thing in England, ever.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've got no sort of basis of relevance. I know that other countries, New Zealand, Australia, have still do it. So I guess they might have well done back in the day.
Yeah, because I know they do it here in Norway, and I know they've talked about bringing it back in, or they've talked about bringing it in England as like an environmental thing, but I've never heard of them say bringing it back in, like as reference to the fact they did it before. So yeah,
I don't know why they don't. I mean, I don't want to get heavily into conservation stuff. I mean, on the side, I am a bit of a world warrior, ocean conservationist in general, and I think that all that sort of stuff should be happening. So why it isn't there, I don't know. Could be great for everyone involved, but not a subject for this podcast. I think that's the end of that scene.
Oh, there was one tiny thing I wanted to point out in that scene. Are you aware that Dell calls Rodney a 24-carat plonker, which may be the only time he ever gets it right? Because from then on, he famously always says 42-carat. Where in this scene, he says 24-carat. Which is obviously correct.
I thought he said something else.
No, he says 24 carat plonker.
No, I mean the famously one.
Oh, the famous one is 42, because it's the numbers reversed. So that's kind of like why he's got mixed up. It kind of makes sense. I know it confused me a lot as a child. It's one of those jokes that I remember as a kid I didn't get, and so therefore I just thought 42 was the highest. I remember that being a thing.
No, I didn't notice it. Yeah, good shit. So now that's the end of the scene. We move on to the last long scene in the flat where the poker shall commence. That's where it all comes from, is a mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons and the tides of the sea. So the flat, nice poker table, bit of green felt starting on. And my first note of this was the fact that Dell is dressed up to the nines like he's trying to impress the queen or something. And he's just having a couple mates round to play poker. And he's got, like, everything on, waistcoat and tie and all that sort of blue suit stuff going on. The reference I was going to say is even when I went to a fairly good casino in Vegas, I was basically in slacks. Like, I had some jeans on and a nice comfortable jumper. If we have friends round for poker and I'm in my pyjamas, basically, like, what's this guy doing?
Well, I think the weirdest thing about it is, if he was going to a casino or to someone else's house, I get it. But he's invited the guy around to his horrible flat. So who's he trying to kid? What, like, you know, you can't wear a suit and stand in dog shit and be like, look, I wear suits. It's like, look where you live. Like, come on, man. So yeah, it does seem fairly pointless. But then he's not nearly dressed up as fancy as Boise.
Well, it's funny, I thought Boise actually looked like shit compared to Dell.
What? That fucking white suit.
But before we get onto that, there's other stuff that happens beforehand. So Dell is after some money from Granddad. And during my research, I found a movie mistake, which I never really pay attention to. But if you accidentally read them, I can't help but look for them.
Oh, no, I saw it and then...
Oh, really? It anyway?
Well, it depends if we're talking about the same thing. Are you talking about the dubbed?
No.
Oh,
the boom mic. So as Granddad hands him the money, literally on the wider shot where you see them both, there is a tiny little thing at the top of the screen, which is a boom mic. Which I don't know. I kind of like once in a while just seeing that sort of thing. I guess imperfections are kind of cool, and it and it makes it feel more human, if that makes sense. I don't normally look for them, but I did look for that, and I was like, oh, I want to see it. A little bit behind the scenes, but it's very, very hard to spot. It's right at the top of the screen, and it dips in and out. When you know what it is, you can see it, but you wouldn't notice unless
you were really looking for it. You did find it?
Yeah. Just really, really subtle.
It's funny that you bring that up, because this episode that we're recording, you've got a new mic, and it looks like a massive boom mic in the middle of your face on the video that I've got of you. So, yeah, quite ironic.
But this, the thing you just mentioned is funny, because this is something that I always picked up on as a kid, and I have it in my head as, like, there's something weird going on in this episode, but I wasn't au fait or intelligent enough in media to understand what was going on. But it seemed like a different word was coming out of his mouth than what he was saying.
I thought it was always thought it was like a playback issue, like there was some sort of a skip or something. I'd never really paid enough attention to see what was going on, and it was only when I was watching it this time I saw it, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. And I was like, that was dubbed, wasn't it? That, what the fuck, why?
Yeah, I mean, they have matched the vocal really, really well. Like, if your eyes are closed, you would never think it was a separate cut vocal, as far as I could see. Like, it's quite seamless.
If you replay it two or three times, you
again
can...
once you know it's there.
Yeah. But I was replaying it, and I was like, wow, that's definitely recorded later in a sound studio. Like, it's very odd. So we should say the line we're talking about, really, shouldn't we?
Yeah. So that line is this one.
Now, what are the odds on you picking the only genuine white water in London?
And the story behind it is, I guess, a bit of a politically sensitive one. I actually didn't take the notes directly on it, if you want to explain what it is.
So, yeah, I saw two different things that were referenced as what he was kind of dubbing over with the word genuine. And one of them, and the one that I actually thought it was when I was, like, looking really hardly at his lips...
Just from lip reading?
Yeah, just lip reading. It looked like he was saying, bona fide Weight Watcher. And that's what someone was saying it was. And I was like, yeah, that looks like what it was. But then I saw someone else...
Why would you dub that?
Well, exactly, that makes no bloody sense. I have absolutely no idea. But that is what it looks like. But then I saw elsewhere that the word being dubbed over was Provo, which was something topical... which I have no idea what that is, and I didn't look. But it didn't look like that's what it was to me. But, I mean, that's... I don't know, and I don't know what that topical reference is a thing, too. Did you research that?
Oh, right,
that?
Okay, sorry. I had researched it and didn't re-research it, because I thought you would, and I was going to leave it to you.
Good.
But from what I remember in my head, the Provo thing is a reference to the Irish and IRA. So it's like an IRA reference for
Fair
the
enough.
Irish...
I could see why they dubbed that.
Yeah, I can't remember the exact...
Because he was Irish, wasn't he?
Yeah. Mm. I don't remember the exact explanation of what the Provo is, but I know it's linked to the Irish and IRA.
Right, okay, so calling a Provo was some sort of, like, thing. It could have basically, like, calling him a terrorist or whatever, and that was seen as maybe not a good joke.
Yeah, something along those lines, basically.
I mean, that
yeah.
makes it, like, something you'd worth dubbing, where bona fide doesn't. But I still think when I lip read, it looked like bona fide to me. But hey, what do I know?
So after that, we get Boycie and Trigger walking in. Boycie looks like some sort of James Bond villain in his full white suit, carrying a briefcase full of money. But I think he looks like shit. Like, don't get me wrong, the suit is reasonably tailored and fits him, but it doesn't look good. I mean, Dale looks suave.
I think it doesn't look good because of fashion, though, because we all think now that anyone in a white suit looks fucking ridiculous. I mean, Dale wore a white suit in the Christmas episode and looked pretty ridiculous, and I think he looks even more ridiculous on someone taller and slimmer like Boycie. But I don't know. I think at the time it was a pretty badass look.
Yeah, I mean, it's gangster, for sure. He's got some balls.
Very gangster. So, it's time for poker.
Yes, let's get down to the poker. So they sat down, they've done the cards, and we get a bit of a cutaway and a fade into what is clearly a few hours later, a few cigars and cigarettes in the ashtray. Looks a lot darker around.
Setting the mood.
And they've clearly been playing for a little while, and at this point, instantly, Trigger's pretty much out. He's had enough and been cleaned out.
Which is kind of gives a good opportunity, actually, to point out Trigger in this episode has gone back to episode one Trigger and not Ashes to Ashes Trigger.
Yeah, I did make a mental note of the fact that he was a bit more compass mentis.
I mean, he was completely compass mentis. He didn't really say anything stupid. I mean, apart from the Moonies thing, but then that was a joke that didn't land. He doesn't say anything stupid at all and is completely straight-faced and normal. It's a bit odd. Like, I see how you need another person there, but...
I think he doesn't have to always play into the stupidity. Like, even stupid people aren't stupid 100% of the time. They can just hold a conversation.
I think for the rest of his time on the show, he's stupid 100% of the time.
I think it's probably overplayed on, if anything. So I kind of like the casualness of Trigger and him being involved in not a just not having a pun or a joke at the end of his sentence because of stupidity is quite refreshing.
Yeah, it is quite nice. I do actually quite like it, and I think it's good, like you say, for his character. It does make more sense than him just being like the clown. But it's something I'm going to continue to pay attention to.
This Hand of Poker, just for those who aren't massively aware of poker, I mean, a few bit of money's gone down, 100 quid in the pot or whatever, and Boyce has got a running flush.
In 5-card draw.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to make you look silly or anything, but do you actually have any idea of the odds of a running flush coming up?
Oh, in a 5-card draw, no idea. So low. I've played thousands of hands of Texas Hold'em, and I've maybe hit one running flush in my life, and I've probably seen about 4. And they're going to be about 100 times more likely in Texas Hold'em than they are in a 5-card draw.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen quite a few on online poker, but played thousands of hands, but myself also a couple of times ever. The stats I have, I'm not actually sure, is a 4-5-card draw at Texas Hold'em, but either way, they're astronomical. So it's a 0.0015% chance, or 72,192 to 1.
Sounds
so
right.
It's pretty damn rare. I mean, if someone's like been smashing it for like 3 times of poker and then just casually busting out a running flush, I'll be calling bullshit.
Like, very casual as well, isn't he? So
yeah,
running flush. It's like, either of them would have done. You don't need them both. Overkill, yeah, mate.
Just a runner or a flash.
Yeah.
So Dell's pretty skint out of money, goes off to magic some up from somewhere, and we get a little cutaway from that to Grandad and Trigger, which is a nice little quote.
He knows more card tricks than Paul Daniels, doesn't he?
Do you reckon he's been switching them?
Of course he's been switching them. He's done you two up like a couple of kippers.
And as we pull away from those two, we see Dell having a little jimmy around the earpiece of his old school phone and pulling out, I actually could work out how much money it was, but something like 500 quid, I think.
He says 500 quid.
Oh, he does say 500 quid. Yeah. Cool. I've worked it out from how much money is bet later in the poker. Which
right, yeah, yeah.
Figured out.
It made your life more difficult than it needed to be there.
Yeah. Forgot he just mentioned it.
He pulls out a monkey. That's what happens.
He pulls out a monkey, and Rodney asks where it came from, and he says, Buzzmee sent it down the line, which is going to be another reference that the younger of our guys went, oh, you didn't look up this?
No, I was going to, but I thought you might.
Oh, good. So when we record this podcast, as you may have gathered by now, we do it over Skype. So one of the things that we do is we do read each other's facial expressions. So the reason I just cut in there is Bobby shaking his head with no idea where I'm going with it, which is interesting because often we do research the same points. So I can educate you as well then, Bob. So Buzzbee was a yellow cartoon bird who featured in a BT commercial from 1976 to 80.
Was it just in the commercial, or was it an existing character that was then used
in
the commercial?
No, just in the commercial, I believe.
Oh, it's like the Punny Monster or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, cool.
It was voice acted by a guy called Bernard Cribbins, who I've never actually heard of. I might actually look up his face to see if I recognise
him. We're now going deep, aren't we? Yeah. You're looking up a voice actor's face because you might recognise him.
And,
I don't think you understand how voice acting works, Jay. Which is ironic because you're currently on a podcast.
But, you know, famous people, actors do voice acts. So, you know, he could be like a face of British comedy.
Is he?
Bernard Joseph Cribbins, OBE, is an English character actor, comedy actor, voiceover artist, and musical comedian with a career spanning over 70 years.
Do you recognise him?
I can tell you, I was going to say, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Bollocks.
I was going to say, never seen this face before, but I now recognise this face here from another... This is such a tangent.
It's all right, we're tangenting. I'm going to look him up and see if I recognise him.
There's this gif that I'm seeing of him crying. It could just be a meme. Maybe he's just famous.
What's his name?
Bernard Cribbins. If you go on images and scroll down, he's definitely a face. He's been in a few things.
Good luck cutting this. Oh, fucking hell, he's been loads of things. I recognise him straight away.
Oh.
What do I know him from? Shit, what do I know him from? Oh, that. I recognise him in that crying.
He might have even been in Fawlty Towers. Playing that, he looks really different, but this one picture, he looks like the hotel inspector.
Oh god, yeah, I think you're right. Well, maybe he was really young, yeah, maybe. You're right, he was the hotel inspector in Fawlty Towers.
Oh, there's, yeah,
a picture of him here. Yeah, but that's
see,
not what
all this shit. All this shit you give me about voice actors, and I freaking nailed it.
I'm really annoyed that I can't think of where I know him from because it's something very specific.
The tagline for this campaign was make someone happy with a phone call, but anyway, that was a huge tangent on who Busby was.
That was impressive.
It was good. We're educating ourselves on stuff.
I random it. 80s pop culture.
Yeah. So serious, everything gets serious now, so we'll get more serious. So he's got some more money, and they're deciding to play some no limit poker, and Rodney, Trigger and Grandad all huddle round the table as it gets a bit more tense.
Dell deals out the hand, and then we get, interestingly, a long shot of Dell's cards. Did you see this?
No.
So this is the instant next shot is, of course, a very famous scene where you see Boyce's hand. He's got a pair of kings. He like rubs his hands over them. And it turns into four kings. This is something we used to do all the time as kids, as a joke. Do you actually? You're like more intrigued by magic than I am. How the fuck is this happening? I don't even know how they shot it, let alone how you might do it in real life.
It's interesting that you say that actually, because I was thinking about how it could be achieved. But at no point thought about the fact that it's been shot anyway, so it must have been done. It was a single shot. I mean,
that's what I mean, yeah.
It's sleight of hand and palming, so he would almost certainly have two hands. I mean, for the shot, as it were, he would already have two cards palmed in his right hand. So when he closes his hand, he's just switching them out. You probably couldn't have someone opposite side of the table facing you to do that. That could only be achieved from looking behind you. So that's how they've shot it, I would say.
Are we just meant to suspend disbelief and just accept that he's some sort of weird card genius, or is there actually a way to do this that we should be able to comprehend?
You could do the same thing. You would just have to hide the cards from the person opposite you rather than the camera behind you.
It just seems difficult to do.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. That takes a shitload of practice to palm off cards like that, for sure.
But interestingly, you see Dale's hand just before, but it's a long shot. And I don't know if you're really meant to see it, but you can only just work it out. And on, like on my kind of laptop as I was watching it, I could just make out that he did have a pair of aces and maybe a pair of eights and then something
really?
Else. Yeah, I could see like two aces, a queen maybe, and an eight, and then maybe another eight, or maybe the one of the queens was an eight. But it looked like a two pair. And there was definitely a pair of aces in there. So I think like that's the joke, that he's basically done the exact same thing.
Interesting. I'm just going to have a look at it now.
Have a little scroll through.
Oh, yeah.
You can see it, right?
He's got two eights, two aces and a six.
Yeah, right.
And it's really easy to see.
Maybe your resolution is better than mine.
Yeah, but the camera's steady and shows it really well.
It's weird that you don't know that they don't... either make it obvious or don't. Like, it's either information we should have or we shouldn't. It's weird that it's kind of there, but it's a bit difficult to see. You'd have to pause it and have a really good look. You know what I mean?
I think it is actually there for the viewer's benefit, because he announces two pair as well. So the whole suspense is just being built up from the fact that we've seen his hand. Anyone that's into poker and can see it well enough can see, oh, he's got two pair, aces and eights is what he's got in his hand. So and the shot is there for a good 4 seconds, and it's clearly open face to the camera. So I think that is actually designed to be noted by the viewer.
I feel like the average 80s telly wouldn't pick that up.
No, I don't think so, but it would be bigger. I mean, I watch it on the laptop screen if I put it on my...
You're also on my only TV. Half a metre away from it. Like back in the 80s, you know, talking about living rooms, your TV was metres away from you and was tiny.
Yeah, I think it's a subtlety, but I think it's still intentional, for sure. God.
I feel like if you want people to know, you'd make it more obvious, but whatever. So we can see at this point, actually, that Del's got a two pair, and we see Boycie pull his card tricks, and suddenly have four kings, and looks like Del Boy's on a hide into nothing.
Yeah, so we get the betting out. Boycie's gone straight up with 100 quid, and we get cool raise, as Del is pretty much adamant that he's bluffing. And he gets to the point where Del's re-raising 200, so then there's now 1,000 in the pot. They've got 500 each, and Boycie reaches into his breast pocket and pulls out a grand, nice and casually.
Which is a beautiful move, by the way.
Yeah, it's very, very sneaky.
Sly.
Del decides to put up all of his jewellery, asks the other guys what they can put in. Trig very generously decides to,
very generously.
To put in his car. And the other two have got square root of nothing to offer.
I mean, but Del offers everything, by the way. Like, literally everything. He tries just saying, like, okay, these things I've got plus the main appliances. And then he's like, yeah, I'm not sure. And then he's like, okay, everything in the flat. Clothes, fridges, freezers, everything. And it's just like, what? And Boycie's going to take it. Like, he'll take it.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he would massively take advantage of that. So everything's at stake on this game. I tried to thought if whether I felt suspense or a lot of the times when you know what's going to happen, you can still feel like in the moment from it. But I think because I knew it so well, I didn't feel emotionally involved. I was just waiting for the reveal. But certainly if you haven't seen it for the first time, and especially if you had noticed the cards that he was holding, you're probably sweating a little bit for Del right now.
Definitely.
So we got quite a surprise reaction from Del Boy when the cards are revealed.
Four?
I didn't know you were good at maths, though.
I thought you were bluffing.
Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 Del Boy. No, you're Nelly.
I thought he was bluffing.
You... Burke.
So Boycie reveals his four kings, and Del is acting a little bit hard done by, thinking he was bluffing, and everyone's very fucked off.
Granddad loses it. I fucking love Granddad's response. I thought he was bluffing, but he bloody wasn't, was he? Like, it's really uncontrolled, which Granddad is usually so like subtle and soft, and it properly cracked me up. I'd kind of forgotten about it.
And just as everyone's like packing up, ready to go, Boycie tries to take some money off the table, and Del stops putting his hand on there, and he's just got this glint in his eye. There's a nice tight shot on David Jason's head, and even though he's like not smiling, it's like his eyes are smiling. There's like a little something there, and he exposes his hand after saying two pair and shows two aces and another. Two aces, which is just perfect. He has this look on his face, if you do watch this after the podcast, when he shows the second two aces, the look on David Jason's face is brilliant. It's like a real fuck you, eat shit sort of thing. but it's just absolute poker face. Like, so much is implied with non-expression. It's brilliant.
I can't imagine what it'd be like to be in a situation where you were so smug and you've just won so big and you're just so fucking pleased. I don't think I've ever been that smug, and I'm pretty smug at the best of times. But, God, that'd be fun.
Boycie is equally as surprised and says that's four aces. Trig exclamates that four aces, I ain't ever seen it before.
But didn't bat an eyelid at the straight flush earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So do you want to know the odds of four aces?
Easier than a straight flush.
Yeah, 4,165 to 1. So considerably 20 times more likely to happen.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But yeah, but Boycie looks like he's Can't think of that. He looks like he's just lost a couple of thousand pounds. That's what it looks like.
I've said, Boise looks like someone took a dump in his dinner.
But he's still being told he has to eat it.
Yeah, exactly. We get a really nice close. Boise comes in after a surprise asking where... actually, fuck it, we'll just sample this last bit because it's brilliant.
Well done, Del.
Thanks.
Nicely played.
Where'd you get those four bloody aces from?
Same place you got them kings. I knew you was cheating, Boise.
Oh, yeah? How?
Because that wasn't the hand that I dealt you.
And that probably would have been a really nice end to the episode, but they've gone one extra further. Dale's decided to be a bit of a saint and give Boise the chance for 200 quid back of his own money, which is, you know, that's a reasonable amount. It's like, I mean, 10%
it's Rodney's idea, wasn't it? Let's be fair.
Oh, yeah, because he says on a winning streak.
Rodney is just so changeable. Straight away he's gone, there's no such thing as a losing streak, no way. Dale wins once and he's like, winning streak, definitely a thing, you're definitely
let it ride. So Dale offers Boise 200 quid of his own money back, which is about 10% ish of the winnings or something along those lines, for a coin flip. Boise doesn't think he's gonna win because of he's won the last two, and Dale says, oh, Rodney can call for me. And inevitably, Rodney calls tails as the coin flip goes up, which is brilliantly poetic. So he loses 200 quid.
It's funny to think about, like you say, how easy it would have been to just end on that, you know, that one joke 30 seconds earlier. I mean, it just makes so much sense that that would be the close, that it would be, that's not the hand that I dealt you, cut to theme music. It feels like it should be there. But it is very Only Fools and Horses to go, no, let's have one more where they can't have it all their own way. They can't come out of it completely smelling the roses. Something has to go a little bit more wrong. I mean, they still end up over a grand up and looking great, but something has to go wrong. And so that was fun. I liked it. I thought it was a clever idea.
Yes, definitely. It didn't take anything away. It didn't need to end there. And it was just like a nice little cherry on the cake. And that concludes the episode. But he's the one who's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and horses work? La 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 la. What did you think then, Bob? Was it everything that you were hoping for?
It really was. When we were talking before about, you know, did we have time to record today? And you mentioned, oh, it's a losing streak, remember? And I was instantly like, oh, yes, I've been looking forward to this. I'd just bang up for watching it. And it was great. Even though I was stopping and making notes and researching other things, I still really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great episode. And, it's an episode I could watch all the time. It might be my favourite so far.
See, I really struggled to think that it's my favourite at all. I really like it for its content, but I don't think that it's necessarily the greatest episode. I think that there have been...
No, I don't think it's the best.
A lot
I
more
just
laughs
think it's my favourite.
And a lot more investment in the storyline, a lot more interest. Like, essentially, nothing happened in this, really. They played a game of poker, they were skin. Like, compared to some of the storylines, which are a lot more elaborate and, like, adventurous. Bear in mind, it's, you know, only 30 minutes long. There's a lot of time with just talking and not really achieving much in this. So,
I mean, arguably the stakes were higher than ever, because before it's always like, okay, we've sold, you know, there's like the cash and curry episode where they've had to sell a load of stuff to raise £2,000 and they end up there. I mean, this is bigger than that. They're already skint. He's used up his mother's savings and offered everything at the flat. Like, I mean, we're all pretty confident there's something going, like, he must have a plan. But for that one minute, they are the lowest they have ever been.
Yeah, for sure. The stakes are at the highest, but it's only in the last 5 minutes that happens.
Yeah, it's not continuous. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't build.
The episode itself is pretty bumbling along until that last crescendo at the end.
I like how kind of simple it is, and it's just one of those really good, clean, early episodes. It's kind of how I think of them more, being the early ones, just pub and flat. And I just really enjoy it. But a lot of it is content. It's like you said, it's not the best, objectively. No way. There are ones that have got a lot more laughs in. But I did really enjoy it, and it's definitely up there with one of my favourites.
It was quite a casual episode. But yeah, I mean, it will forever be one of my favourites just for that last 5 minutes. So brilliant. Glad that it lived up to our expectations, and we managed to dissect it froggily in a way that was good. I don't know what that means. Possibly a bit longer an episode. This one, we went on a few tangents, but allowed ourselves to.
Good luck cutting this one, mate. Good luck editing.
It's gonna be fun editing this bastard. So we look forward to the next episode. Do you know what it is?
I looked at the title and I had absolutely no idea, and I didn't go for a screenshot or anything, but I didn't recognise the title. What was the title again? No Greater Love. Well, it's obviously one of his fiancée ones, but I don't know which one. Heather? Is it the Heather one?
No, because that's the one that's called Diamonds Are for Heather.
Yeah, Diamonds Are for Heather. That's a Christmas special,
so,
I think, as well.
No Greater Love. I don't actually remember the girl's name.
Oh, is this the one with Rodney and the older bird?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Nice.
So this is really good episode for certainly for Dale's character, and does a few things for painting a bit more of a broader picture for him. Definitely a few laughs in there. Really looking forward to this one, actually. I think this is wildly different than probably any of the episodes we've seen before.
Yeah, this is going to be different. It's interesting. Yeah, I think it's going to be really different. I'm looking forward to it.
I don't remember how funny it is, but it's definitely a very interesting, more soap style episode, I guess.
Yeah, and we're following Rodney around more as well.
But thanks for joining us for one of our favourite episodes. I hope this podcast was one of your favourites of ours as well. And with that, we will leave you until next week for No Greater Love. Thanks for all of your foibles, Bob.
Pleasure. What's our what's our music out, Jay?
Well, quite an interesting one. I don't know if this is a great idea or not. And there's no music in there. It's obviously poker-centric. I wasn't going to play friggin' Lady Gaga Poker Face or anything like that. But I was struggling to think of anything that fit. So I've gone a bit of a tangent again. So one of my very good friends and I, when we were travelling, used to travel with a couple of guitars and write a few songs. And one of the songs that I wrote it involves some poker. So I'm actually going to play you a very small snippet of a song that I wrote with a friend many years ago while in New Zealand that mentions some poker, because why the fuck not?
It's your podcast. Well, it's our podcast. Do whatever the hell you want. Yeah, I mean, you know, you haven't got to worry about copyright then.
Yeah, it's not great. I'm not amazing at either playing guitar or singing, but you know, why not? Let's chuck it in.
They've just listened. These people have listened to us talk for like half an hour plus. They can listen to 10 seconds of you singing. It's all good. Hope you enjoy it, people.
All right, so this is... Fuck off, Alexa. No, I didn't. Go away.
Go away is usually defined as move away from a place into another direction.
Good.
You've just been fucking owned by Alexa, by the way.
So here it is. This is Day in the Life, Brackets of a Fool, by Jamie Hall and Nick Gent. Thank you very much.
So thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Only Fools and Brotherly Forces. Really hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get in contact with us, then you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/OnlyFoolsBrothers. Our Twitter handle is @OnlyFoolsBros. Or if you want to send us a longer message, the email address is onlyfoolsbrothers@gmail.com. Thanks very much, and if you can give us a rating or review or anything like that on your podcast application of choice, we'd really appreciate it. Thanks very much, everyone. See you next time.
Only vices, throwing up my heart and down the drain, going all in with my ladies again. It's just another day in the life of a fool.